Every Thursday night, you ask the questions, DT gives you his answers. No holds barred.
It's Q&A with Don Tony. This is your chance to speak your mind and be heard about anything.
Q&A with Don Tony. And now, your host, Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Danhausen is now a member of All Elite Wrestling contract. Last night when we did Wednesday Night Dynamite, I obviously was here live and was not aware that they made the announcement. And I tell you, it's interesting. Interesting to see so many people that were upset at this. I mean, of course, AEW is a bloated roster. I mean, and you know what's funny? And I'm going to make a point that no one else is making. We've heard a lot of shows say, oh, but they're releasing. They're not going to renew a lot of contracts. So that will settle a lot of the bloating problem. How many shows have you heard say that? Well, I ask you this. So you look at it a different way. And if you get into a conversation with anybody out there, you could hit them with this banger of a question. Next time you hear somebody say that or you see somebody write that, ask them who is currently on television that they are going to non-renew their contract. You've heard Leo Rush, Marco Stunt, Peter Avalon, Brian Cage, Joey Janela, and a few others. What do they all have in common? None of them are on TV right now. So when all of these contracts don't get renewed and a bunch of others, tell me how this fixes the bloating problem. It doesn't. It doesn't. You know, people say things that sound like they make sense, but when you actually think about it, it makes no sense whatsoever. Now, my thoughts on Danhausen signing with All Elite Wrestling, I'm going to say it like this. And by the way, welcome, great channel members, La Nostra Familia. This is Q&A with Don Tony live stream for Thursday night, January 27th, 2022. And I know my entire Donzilla Army out there will be enjoying the audio version of this show. If you want to check out these shows live on Thursdays or you want to see the video and also get a bunch of other perks. And by the way, that video that I did almost a year ago about channel memberships, I will be recording a new one this weekend. We are supposed to get a foot of snow, maybe more. So I will have some free time this weekend. I'm going to record a new one announcing some new perks. A little bit more lively. You know, a year ago, I was going into this still very, very, a rookie. I mean, there's so much still I need to learn. But now after a year, I have an excellent idea of what you all like, what you want me to focus on, and what you want me to stay away from. So there will be an upgraded video this weekend. But if anyone out there decides they want to be a channel member, believe me, you know, it's not a money grab. I mean, I definitely want to make sure everybody gets there, whether it's $1.99 or $4.99's worth. And usually it goes right back in the shows. You know that. And I'm going to be hanging out with our channel members live. They will be giving me topics of discussion. We have a few already. And this was some DMs, emails, some ideas that some of our channel members gave me throughout the week. You know, for everybody who's live, much love as well. Now, please, for those who are live, you do not need to send super chats in. I mean, I'm not going to say no. And that's not me saying to you, send it. Don't. You already do so much for me and this channel. You have my undivided attention. And everybody always has my undivided attention, but Obviously, Thursday, since it's just channel members, our audience, our live audience, is very, very small. It's very, very intimate. So I promise everybody who's tuning in, we will definitely have some conversation tonight. Now, we have some wrestling to get into. Some of you wanted me to talk about Major League Baseball and the 2022 Hall of Fame class, which is David Ortiz. I have quite a few things to say about that. And for anybody out there that's been asking me, Don Tony, you know, please, we want you to do a baseball podcast. You would get a little tease tonight of what would have been. And I am pissed off. I am very pissed off about Major League Baseball. And they're killing the game. I mean, the game will never be killed, but they are seriously hurting this game with the way they handle these Hall of Fames. I'll talk about it a little bit later, but it is disgusting to see what they did to Roger Clemens, to Barry Bonds, to Curt Schilling, to say the least. We'll talk about it later. Now, if anyone out there that's already saying to me, DT, you're nuts, hear what I have to say first. Because a lot of times when I talk about topics, you know, a lot of people go in with an open mind, and by the time they're finished listening, what I have to say, quite often I hear people say, wow, I never thought of it like that, or I never looked at it this way. You know, I don't talk to just clickbait passion. I mean, that's other shows, not me, not me. We could talk about Pete Rose. I give you my thoughts on Pete Rose, you know, when we get to the baseball. Before that, I want to get into Jacked. No. You know what sucks about tonight? I got my coffee. It's a little bit light, so I get some sleep tonight. And I got one of these. Anybody that's ever been in a hospital, you ever get one of these? You know, they always have, like, the messages on the water bottle. Water is essential for good health and long life. I filled this son of a bitch up with ice water, and I'm like, ah, I'm going to enjoy this tonight. Wherever I put it, it looks like the straw has an erection. Wherever I put it. Oh. Actually, if I put it there, you don't see it. But that's not good, because then I'll have water everywhere. And also, if you notice, microphones a little bit closer. I got a few of you out there with some great feedback, and you know, I heard the audio going in and out a little bit. I think this will fix the problem. We moved the traffic light to the opposite side. Rams fan says the only baseball game he ever went to in his life was a Barry Bonds Giants game. He hit a home run, but as a kid, someone distanced from him got it. Oh, okay, I see what he's saying. I have a few things to say about that later. I want to just mention this guy for a minute. Now, if anybody out there that's going to get wise, because I had two people in the comment section yesterday after the show, is DT, I bet you don't have a Danhausen shirt. Trust me, I didn't go on Amazon last night at midnight, order it, and tell them to deliver it to me within 24 hours. Maybe if I ordered it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't even know if they sell Danhausen shirts on the Amazon store. But no, I wore this shirt about a month or so ago on one of the episodes. Not like I haven't worn this before. My overall thoughts on Danhausen is this. A lot of people out there still don't understand the AEW contracts. They still don't understand that you will get a small amount of money even if you don't work. But for the most part, if you're not doing shows, not even Darks or Elevations, you're not getting paid what you normally would. His contract will allow him to work other promotions. I mean, look what happened. We talked about yesterday about Tony Nese. The Acclaimed, a couple of days ago, said that they're available for limited bookings or this and that, you know. And you go look at that thread on Twitter and you will see about 75% of the responses. Oh my God, I hope you're still with AEW. Guys, gals, even though we've talked about it probably 30, 40 times over the last year and a half on the episodes, you got still 80, 90% of fans out there that don't understand what the AEW contracts are all about. And I'm not criticizing it. I think but you know, why do you think when Cody makes the cute little we don't trademark names when he made fun of Walter, Gunther McGillibuddy or whatever he said, that's because Tony Khan's contracts are not that advanced. They're not looking for their copyright, you know, the other than their own content, they're not looking to trademark their own character names. So when the people leave, that costs money. There's a lot of procedure. It almost seems like that, you know, those aspects of the business, they're not interested in doing. They're focusing on other things. And hey, there's nothing wrong with that. But Danhausen's contract, if people understood that he's still going to be able to work a lot of other promotions out there and do his outside ventures, you know, he will be labeled as an AEW wrestler, and AEW will be his primary. You know, you look at it like this. Look at it like a guy who is married to someone else, male, female, whatever you want to choose. And, you know, the relationship is open. And the wife, you know, the spouse says to the husband, look, you know, you could go out, you could have fun, you could bang, you could do all these things. But when I want it, your ass better be here. So his contract is not going to be this major exclusive contract. Plus, he is still recovering from a broken leg. Danhausen is a unique character. The guy is a fun guy. He's not going to be a main eventer. Of course, he's going to be a fan favorite, and you're going to see a lot of goofy antics. That's what he is. I mean, over the years, I'm not comparing him to Doink the Clown or Hornswoggle or anything like that, but I'm just saying sometimes a little lighthearted character that puts a smile on people's face, it makes them feel good a little bit. That's what Danhausen's all about. And, you know, I saw a lot of wrestlers yesterday. I saw one, you know, basically telling the internet wrestling community, y'all weird. Y'all weird. You support people who have been proven to be sex offenders more than this guy. You know, and you know what's interesting? Majority of the people who criticized Danhausen last night probably never even saw his work, other than maybe, you know, him on social media doing his videos and this and that, or appearing on Renee's podcast or something else. That's all they know him of. So I'm cool with Danhausen. So he is all elite. Good for him. Good for him. So before we get into other topics, because I'm sure you all heard about Shane McMahon, Shane O'Mac, the rumors are buzzing. What is on your mind? Let me know. Nero Faye has a confession. He was on Solo Monster's call-in show tonight. That's cool. Dude, you enjoy what you want to enjoy, my friend. I have nothing against Jason at all. You know, we have two different shows, two different styles. You know, he's got a very loyal fan base. And, you know, this is, and look, it took me many years, not really with Jason, I mean, with other podcasts out there, but it took me a lot of years and a lot of growing up to say, look, man, you know, and it was probably around 2008 when it was really instilled in my brain, but probably I'd say about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, is really where I mentally, you know, accepted it and grew up and moved on. You know, back in the day, I used to rip so many shows out there. We did skits. I would curse people out. I would make fun of them. I would put clips online to show how ridiculously stupid they were. And most of the times they deserved it. But, you know, someone had said to me back in like 2008, you know, like, dude, don't give this impression that you want people to tune in to you because everybody else sucks. You want them to tune in to you because you're good. And, you know, it makes sense, and it's very, very intelligent, but if your mindset is not in the same place, you know, you could try and you could think about it, but it'll never happen. And as the years went by, I grew up a little bit, and I changed my views on a lot of things, and there's a lot of people that do shows out there. And look, in no way, shape, or form am I trying to tell people, hey, don't tune into his show, tune into mine. Enjoy both. Enjoy both. The sad thing about it is, and I'm not accusing Jason in any way, I know it's not him, but there are other podcasts out there who have lost viewers and listeners because of my shows and have gone out of their way to try to sabotage my shit on YouTube. I mean, I'm doing the audio stuff while some of these people were in diapers. You know, this is my 25th year, as I've obviously said 100,000 times. But, you know, to me, it's like, if you got to be that desperate, that just shows you how insecure you are about your own show. You know, but doesn't bother me, man. You don't have to explain to me. You know, and like I always say to others, you know, does anybody go on other people's podcasts and say, oh, I have a confession to make. I tuned into Don Tony last night. You know, I don't want anybody to do that. You enjoy what you want to enjoy, seriously, whether it's podcasts or promotions or any forms of entertainment. That is your right, man. Enjoy, enjoy. So I am absolutely cool with it. It's all good. And I thank everybody last week when I said, who do you want me to look into collaborating with next, doing an episode? And majority said Jason. So I am going to reach out to him to see if he wants to do an episode together. And, you know, I definitely wanted to have some, you know, meat and potatoes behind it. I'll probably have a lot of you and, you know, everybody, the whole family, to send in some topics or questions or discussions you want us to have. You know, I'll talk about a little bit of his background as well. So that'll be coming up. That'll be coming up. Man, I never thought that I would be a converter and become a follower of Jim Cornette. Believe it or not, my fiance loves Jim Cornette. And the weird thing about it is Jim Cornette is very, very vulgar. Fuckity fuck, 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 McFuck. And she laughs her ass off. And I'm like, I swear to God, I said this this week. I said, honey, let me ask you a question. She was just laughing her ass off hearing him talk about fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck. And I said, how come when I do it, you're like, wow, you know, why don't you grow up? You're so vulgar. Why do you have to curse like that? But she listens to him and she laughs her ass off. She really had no answer to that. So, but yeah, I am now a fan of Jim Cornette. I check out a lot of their shows. I originally signed up for the Patreon and then I canceled it immediately because it's like some retro library, but it's not updated much at all. In fact, I was checking out some other people's YouTube channel membership things, and I see channels where their membership stuff hasn't been updated in like a month or two. And they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I mean, that's awesome. You could get that many people to sign up. You know, we're not even at, I think, 80. But if you could get that many people to sign up and then not have to give them nothing in return, you know, I would think that you would want to give something regardless. Yeah, Cornette is no fucks given. Rams fans says, back in the 1-2-3 chat days, they used to call Jason was a Brian Alvarez wannabe. But, you know, I never honestly remember that. Honestly, don't remember that. Interesting. Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about Shane McMahon for a couple of moments. I don't know if you're aware of it. Now, look, this is still rumor. Obviously, until we hear, here comes the money at the Royal Rumble, you know, just take it as rumor right now. But there's rumors going around that Shane McMahon will be in the Royal Rumble. There's some reports out there. So what I did tonight, and I originally had this on the preview, but then I deleted it. It's like, I don't need to put DT exclusive. I talked to you. I emailed couple of people that I'm friendly with in the wrestling world, and one works for WWE, is not high up, but still, you know, gets me decent enough information. That's why if you notice, a lot of the fake news that's out there never even reaches this show, because when I reach out to a couple of people like, I don't think so. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. That's why, like I say, that last week was the latest one that WWE officials are disappointed about NXT 2.0's first 4 months, that they expected fans to gravitate more to the wrestlers. What the hell does that even mean, if you think about it? By the way, later on, we're going to talk about a Tony Khan interview that he made a couple of days ago. And what is very, very interesting about it is there is a certain person that people have insisted that WWE's put a dunce hat on. WWE is erasing his legacy. That, and this is somebody that is a extremely high position in WWE that you would think stockholders would be concerned, or non-wrestling journalists would be concerned, or business sites would be concerned. Kind of interesting. Nick Khan does this big interview, and this alleged dunce is not discussed at all. Nick, what's going on with this dunce? We will talk about him later. But what I got back is that Shane McMahon being in the Royal Rumble, and this is something that you haven't read anywhere online, it's not to just fill a spot in the 30-man Royal Rumble. They could fill the final 10 spots very, very easily. You throw a couple of NXT stars, that you could throw three or four at minimum. You get two, three legendary surprises, and apparently that is happening. All you need is two or three more people. You're done. You got your 30. So they're not filling Shane McMahon, if he appears, just to fill a spot. The idea is that he would be doing something in Saudi Arabia and or possibly WrestleMania. Royal Rumble would be the gateway to something else. So we may get Shane McMahon winter in WWE. Look, I know some of you out there do not like Shane McMahon. It's not that you don't like him, but you could do without him in the ring. The best in the world stuff is probably where people disliked him the most. I have always been a fan of Shane McMahon. Sure, some of his early work seemed like glorified stuntman work, but I like Shane McMahon. And honestly, you know, Shane McMahon on TV, for me, is more entertaining than Shane McMahon off TV. So I would definitely welcome Shane McMahon if he came back for a few months. Look at Vince. Of course, Shane McMahon is nowhere near Vince's age, but look at Vince. You go back 10 years and he'd get a little physical. I mean, it's not that long ago when Kevin Owens even headbutted him, which, you know, was still way past. But my point is, you know, 5 years from now, Shane McMahon may not be able to go in the ring anymore, or 10 years from now, you know, and before you know it, I mean, my God, look at Randy Orton. Randy Orton did another interview, and it amazes me because this is like the fifth or sixth time in the last 2 years that Randy Orton's done an interview and said, you know, I think I'll wrestle to the age of 50 and then I'll retire. And people are talking about it today like they never heard that before. This is like the sixth or seventh time that Randy Orton's brought that up. But think of it like this. Randy Orton's already wrestling on TV for 20 years. I guarantee you, 8 years from now, we'll fly like this. And then you're going to realize that Randy Orton would have been on TV for 30 years. It's mind-boggling. You know, when I was a kid and just becoming a wrestling fan and you experienced a wrestler and they were on TV for your local product for 4 or 5 years and it seemed like an eternity. And then you got a guy that could be there 30 years. So Shane McMahon, no guarantee that he'll be able to do this 5, 10 years from now. I mean, my God, I miss Vince. I miss the true Mr. McMahon character. I mean, there was a couple of storylines that I would have done without, but Mr. McMahon character, I mean, it's sad. It's sad to see him so fragile. And the funny thing is we keep hearing that the guy is still a monster in the gym. He's still a monster in the gym. You look at him and you'd say to yourself, there ain't no way this guy is working out in the gym. What is he doing? He's lifting crazy ass weights, and yet he still looks more fragile than he was even a couple of years ago. So I definitely am looking forward to seeing Shane McMahon back on TV. Absolutely. Chat room, what do you all think about Shane McMahon? Thumbs up, thumbs down. A little curious. Just put a little thumbs up or thumbs down. And there is no wrong answer. I don't want anybody to feel like if you say, you don't ever have to worry here on this channel. And trust me, I see it sometimes in the comment section. Somebody makes a comment about something and somebody really like rags into you. Sometimes I just delete their shit so you don't even see it. But most of the time I'll tell a person, hey, you know, they have every right to their view, just like you. Like the stuff with Adam Cole yesterday. You know, some people thought, oh, Adam Cole, you know, dead and buried. You know, I disagree. Do opposite ends of the spectrum on that. But just because you disagree with someone, you don't need to put them down and make them feel, you know, this big because, you know, they have a total difference of opinion. So we got more thumbs down than thumbs up. Okay. All right. Interesting. Very, very interesting. I know. Shane McMahon in increments. I could go with that, Harris. Shane McMahon in increments. That's probably the most acceptable. Absolutely. Like, it's not something that you should have. It's like a type of food or something that you shouldn't have every day. But once in a while, it's okay. A little piece of cake, you know? Or something with a little extra cholesterol. You know, I got some messed up news today. I was trying to block it out of my mind since we're talking about cholesterol. Since so many of you out there know the health situation of my mom and my dad, get a load of this one. So I've been telling you all that my mom has been dealing, she's got hypertension in her lungs, and that actually killed somebody very famous recently. I think that also took the life of Bernie Mac. Hypertension in your lungs, not your heart, in your lungs. She's got it. So she made an appointment with a pulmonologist, and I think I had told you all like 2 months ago that they have her on a two-month wait, that they went to Florida, and she can't even like walk the airport. She just is out of breath. So check this shit out. Today, my mom had the appointment with the pulmonologist. And believe me when I tell you, when it comes time for my appointment, I will shoot a few seconds of video so nobody thinks that I'm blowing smoke up your asses. But she went and saw this pulmonologist today in St. Francis Hospital. They set her up for another procedure that she has to have a week from this Wednesday. And they want to see if her hypertension in her lungs is hereditary. Because apparently that's what took my grandmother. You know, like I always knew, and I told you all that my grandmother died in 1991 from a heart attack. But she was extremely, extremely heavy. I know some of you have seen a picture of her. This doctor now thinks that this could be hereditary. And if it is, not only does it have to be handled differently, but they told my mom today that if it comes back that it's hereditary, I have to get this test done. My brother has to get this test done. And this might be something that will affect me and my brother down the line. That sucks. That sucks because you all know I had the heart procedure, about 6 weeks ago? And, you know, they found a little bit, but nothing that I really have to be concerned. And I didn't even deal with my prostate yet. I still got to go in for that. And I got to get that shit done before I get married. So sucks. Really sucks, man. My grandmother was an OG, absolutely Rams fan. If it wasn't for my grandmother, I would not be sitting here right now. Maybe I would have become a wrestling fan years later, but my grandmother is the one that got me hooked. And my uncle, you know, her brother is the one that, you know, got me the memories from the Ridgewood Grove Arena because he worked for WWF. And, you know, speaking of WWF, I got to show you something. You'll get a kick out of this. I don't remember what website posted this today, but it's from a wrestling magazine. I'm assuming this is somewhere, it's got to be in the late 70s. I don't think it's early or mid 80s. Just when I show you the picture, you'll understand why. You'll get a kick out of this. And it blew me away. Oh, you'll really get a kick out of this. You know, back, and we've talked about it before, back when I was a kid, a lot of the wrestling magazines had pen pals that you could actually write to the magazine, send a picture of yourself. They put you in the magazine as a pen pal. And if you had things in common, you could actually write to other pen pals. And I've been too lazy, but I have to pull the infamous picture that I've told you all about. There was this guy that was a pedophile, and he was probably about 30 years old. And you would go into the magazine and you would usually see fans 6 years old, 9 years old, 15 years old. That usually was the max. You might get someone 17, 18 once in a while, but no nefarious intentions. And then you had this guy that was in his 30s, and he sent two pictures. One, he's sitting like this. The other, he's sitting like this, and he claimed to be twin brothers. And this guy was trying to be pen pals with a whole bunch of kids. True story. So somebody posted this today, and I've seen the picture before, but I never bought it to look at the address. Now, when I show this to you, this has been online many times before, and this person no longer lives at that address, all right? The scary thing about it is if you know where to look online, you can pull the information about the family. Scary shit when you realize it. But just to show you how crazy these wrestling magazines were, check this out. This was Taz in one of the magazines back in the day. 9-year-old Taz enjoys bowling. Bruno is his favorite. Likes good guys. Anyone for pen pals. The fucking wrestling magazine posted his address. I swear, friends, if you want, I will do it tomorrow. I never knew that address that you're looking at. That is 5 minutes from here. I had an ex-girlfriend that lived one block up from that address. I know that building because there's a business right next to it. I had no idea that Taz used to be pretty much a neighbor. That's crazy. That is freaking crazy. So I had told someone earlier, and like, oh, you should drive by the house and record it. Show everybody, you know, where he used to live in the neighborhood. I don't know how that would come across online. I might be coming off into creepy territory. I mean, look, you know, when someone is long gone and you want to show like where they grew up or this, this, and that, and you know, like John Gotti. I've had people that say to me, oh, you got to show us the neighborhood. You got to show us where, you got to show where the club used to be. You got to show this. That's different. To go to someone's old house where they used to live, that might go into the creepy territory. But they posted the address. I thank God, seriously, thank God, as far as I know, Taz did not get any perverts trying, you know, to send him stuff or anything like that. But just how crazy is that? I mean, and you know why the magazines did that? Laziness. The magazine was not going to be the post office for pen pals. You know, they put the pictures in the magazine. Oh, you want to talk to Peter? No problem. You contact him directly. We're not going to, you send it to us and we'll send it to them. They're not going to be the escrow for pen pals. Can you imagine all the stamps? You think the magazines wanted to spend, they wanted the fans for interaction to be in the magazines. But you go in the magazine, oh, I want a pen pal. I like Larry Zbyszko. Oh, yeah, well, we got all these people that, you know, similar to your age that also like Larry Zbyszko. Okay, well, how do we exchange information? How do I get this other person's info? Oh, we'll just post it in a fucking magazine and you do whatever you want with it. I can't believe that. Look, thank God. Thank God. But when you really look at back at it, I can't believe that we never heard like an infamous story where somebody was arrested for trying to, you know, maybe not even just send perverted stuff, but my God, you show up at the person's house. Could you imagine if that was today? Not only could you mail stuff, you could show up at their house. Imagine, I'm thinking like, you know, like one of these Forensic Files episodes. 9-year-old Peter left his house to go to school. And 34-year-old John Schmuck, who got his address from a wrestling magazine and knew his favorite wrestler is Bruno. Hey, Pete, guess what? Bruno is at the diner right now. And I know you like Bruno. You want to come with me and meet Bruno? Oh, yeah, let me drop my school bag. Let's go to... That's like a bad Forensic Files episode. It blows my mind that that never happened. Look, there's been pedophiles for thousands of years. I mean, I watch a lot of crime channels now on YouTube, and I see things about the 1800s, the early 1900s with some of these whack jobs. And I'm saying to myself, my God, just think that's like pedophile heaven in the 70s. You open up a wrestling magazine and there's the street addresses. Plus, who in their right mind as parents would let their kids mail their address and put it in a magazine? Mom, in the magazine. Oh, that's nice, son. That's nice, daughter. I can't believe that none of these pedophiles took advantage of that. Thank God they didn't. Or they might have attempted, and maybe just some are just too embarrassed to talk about it. Or maybe the parents intercepted it, never told their kids. That's crazy. That is freaking crazy. Unbelievable. And seriously, I know what I'm saying sounds nuts. That's not nuts. I mean, my God, you think of like, just think of some of the infamous serial killers that used to prey on young children. I mean, my God, if they, thank God they never like knew about Vergagna. You know, or knew about Gorgeous George or Professor To Tanaka. You know, could you imagine? Like, blah, 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 blah. Went to the store and picked up Pro Wrestling Illustrated, 1973. And look at that. He's got a whole Rolodex. Fuck the black book. Hey, and a cop, hey, what are you doing over there? I'm just reading the magazine. Did you hear Vergagna won the title again for the 85th time? Look. But meanwhile, you know, he's focused on the pen pals page. That is nuts. Nero Fay, do I think LA Knight will be at the Royal Rumble? I think there is a good chance of it. I think the fans would enjoy it. I think LA Knight, I think Ciampa, I think Pete Dunne, Roderick Strong. You know what's funny? I have an Undisputed Era shirt. It's a pretty cool one. I was going to wear it yesterday, and I can't find my red magic marker. It is a black and white shirt, and it's got the four heads of the Undisputed Era. And what I wanted to do was I just wanted to put a big red X over the head of Roderick Strong. But once I do that, the shirt is ruined, obviously. But I couldn't find the red marker yesterday. I just don't think Roderick Strong, I think his WWE in-ring career is almost over. I like Roddy. I like Roddy. No question. But you just look at the WWE product. It's so character-driven. What the hell is this guy going to do? I mean, he shows up in the main roster. Tell me, how is he going to get over with the WWE Universe? I mean, just as he is. I mean, oh, it's Roderick Strong. You think WWE Universe is going to give a shit? James Campbell is asking, do I think Ciampa is done with NXT? Not yet. Not yet. Let's make this clear. WWE needs some older stars. And when I mean older, I don't mean they have to be in their 40s and 50s. They need some veteran wrestlers to help guide the wrestlers of tomorrow. Bron Breakker, you look at Bron Breakker, you look at, look, Cameron Grimes is still there to help the wrestlers of tomorrow. They need some established wrestlers to help bring up these younger, inexperienced stars for the next year or two. So the idea that everybody over the age of 35 or 30 is going to be shown the door is just ridiculously stupid. That was never the case. They were going to get rid of the higher-end contracts because they don't want the focus to be around a 35-year-old anymore. They want the focus to be around someone who could ultimately show up on Raw or SmackDown and be the next Charlotte Flair, the next Sasha Banks, the next Finn Balor, you know, the next Roman Reigns, the next Seth Rollins. You know, they don't want, with all due respect, they don't want an Adam Cole, a Kyle O'Reilly. I don't even know about a Johnny Gargano. I don't know. Johnny Gargano, if he comes back, he'll probably immediately get into a feud with Grayson Waller. But 5 years from now, yeah, if Johnny Gargano is willing to be on the main roster, I think Johnny Gargano would come back to WWE. But I don't know if Johnny Gargano wants that kind of schedule. If he wants more of a part-time schedule, especially with him about to be a father, WWE would not fit that bill. The idea of, and this is why so many of those shows out there were disturbingly wrong, because as the Road Dogg said, these people are mixing their personal feelings with news. And that is a no-no in journalism. I mean, of course, you can have an opinion and you can express an opinion, but you always have to throw the fact out there as well. And the thing is, you know, you look at it, a lot of these wrestlers, NXT is not designed for Adam Cole to wrestle there until he retires. NXT is not designed for Ciampa, Kyle O'Reilly to wrestle 10, 15 years in NXT. When you have the baseball league, Major League Baseball, every player in the farm system, they want to build them so they could ultimately make it to the major leagues. They don't want to pay big money for someone who will just sit in double A. That's nonsense. And again, this is why WWE is a $1 billion company, and this is why a lot of shows out there can't even make $25,000 a year. You know, I mean, you just look at it. You know, they just put too much of their personal feelings in it instead of really focusing on it. That's why so much of what we said ended up being true, because we did not, we let our personal feelings get involved, but that was after we talked about the actual news behind it. Yeah, look at what I wrote on Twitter earlier today. Guys, gals, I'm this close of not going on Twitter at all anymore. Because you all know where to find me. I mean, look, you DM me. If you tweet me, of course, I'll respond back to you. But I wrote this morning. I said, when did it become the it thing that people seek out the dumbest of the dumb that make these ridiculously stupid statements? Where did it become the it thing that you seek these people out just to go against them to make yourself come across smarter? I mean, that's just, it's insane. And the worst part is you see people now taking viewpoints and articles that they know are false and clickbaiting it in a title as fact. And then you click on it and they say it's false. If they know it's nonsense, why are they talking about it in the first place? Now, if somebody asks, that's different. But it's just, it's like the old clickbait. Back in the 90s, everyone, back in the 90s or in the early 2000s. In fact, my favorite one was always when Booker T was on SmackDown. And I remember a website at the, you might remember these old articles. They write a news article, and at the very bottom, there would always be a sentence like, I don't know, let's use one now. Let's see here. Veer Mahan to appear on SmackDown? Click here for details. And then you click on it, and it says, no, he's coming to Raw. And you're like, motherfucker, because they got pop-up ads. That all the websites did that back. If you want to have fun, seriously, if you want to have fun, you got to go on Wayback Machine. And you got to go on some of the old websites, the old wrestling websites, and just look at old news articles. And at the bottom of every article, it'll say, oh, the Road Dogg to appear on Raw Monday? Click here for details. And then you click on it. It says, no, Road Dogg is released. It's like, oh my God, that's how you would get suckered into it. So that's the new, that's the next level. It's what's happened now. But when I posted it, almost nobody reacted to it because so many people are doing that online right now. You know, the most infamous one recently was a random person saying Eddie Guerrero was a B-plus player. This was not a Hall of Fame wrestler saying that. This was not a major news reporter saying that. This was a wrestling fan that had a Twitter account with 47 followers, and thousands of people gave this guy attention just so they can make their comment and make themselves look smarter. When did that become the end thing? And again, most people don't even react to it because they're guilty of doing it themselves. So that's horrible. Near AEW could be the solution for Gargano, schedule-wise. I agree. By the way, we could talk about this now. Johnny Gargano was trending last night on Twitter. And you know a lot of people for the last couple of weeks were clickbaiting that Johnny Gargano's AEW debut is going to be January 26th. Yeah. January 26th? Yeah, January 26th. Now, honestly, we did not know. It was very interesting that Pro Wrestling Tees, and, you know, look, you might think it's a little devious that Pro Wrestling Tees had a shirt on sale, limited edition, and the last day that it was on sale was the day before Dynamite. And a lot of people thought, like, oh, they're pulling the shirt because he's going to have his AEW merchandise. Now, you might think that's a little bit of tacky business practices. Remember something, Johnny Gargano, that's his Pro Wrestling Tee store. So he was willing to do it as well. I don't think that's nefarious, you know, but the thing is, Johnny Gargano was trending yesterday on Twitter because a lot of people thought that he was going to make his AEW debut. So Johnny Gargano wrote the following in response to him trending on Twitter. He says, and I quote, I heard you, and you have no idea how much it means to me that you're excited to see me back at it. It's scary to step away because your insecurities say, quote, they'll forget about you, end quote. But you haven't forgotten, and I promise that I will make it up to you as soon as possible. Now, look, the fact is, and we've been saying it for months, his wife is going to be giving birth in February. And all of his energy, all of his focus, all of his time is dedicated for him, his wife, and the birth of their child. And once that birth happens and everything is in order and squared away, and then it comes to a point that Johnny Gargano can fit in pro wrestling and have a newborn, then that's when you'll see him return to wrestling. And I agree with Nir. I think AEW would be a great fit for schedule. The problem is, how do you incorporate him in storylines? I mean, you don't want to get somebody and then now you got him and it's like, okay, now what do we do with the person? You know, they ran into that problem with Jay Lethal, and you noticed the net now is starting to get a little impatient with the way AEW handles new signees. That's why there's controversy with Adam Cole. Adam Cole had the match with Orange Cassidy yesterday, and he lost. I didn't think it was a big deal, but there were a lot of people that like, oh my God, look at him in NXT compared to now. And, you know, this is not the Adam Cole, you know, Undisputed Era Adam Cole. This is like a shell of that person. I disagree with it in a lot of ways, but I understand why some people feel that way. But I blame this on the way AEW has utilized a lot of people. You know, we made the joke yesterday about it. You know, Chris Statlander makes the save for Red Velvet because Layla Hirsch attacks her after the match. Chris Statlander and Layla Hirsch's feud has been going on for like 7 weeks. And it's like, that's not a storyline that should go on for 2 months. And what happens is they interact with each other and then nothing happens for 2 or 3 weeks. Look at Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill is going to take on Julie Hart on Friday. I already saw the spoilers. I'm not going to talk about it. But I will say this. You look at the entire TBS tournament. What was it, like 16 women in that tournament? With the exception of one, maybe two. Where are all these women trying to get at Jade Cargill? I mean, there's no excuse for it. Other than this is how AEW is handling it. You're starting to see fans getting more and more impatient. And that's going to maybe help tighten up AEW and how to use wrestlers. No, this is not a knock on Jade. This is not a knock on Jade. Everybody starts somewhere. She'll get better in time. She had a decent match last week with Anna Jade. This is not criticizing Jade Cargill. Just for storyline common sense. Why isn't Thunder Rosa? Everybody who was in that tournament was trying to get that title. Why, from Ruby Riott to Thunder Rosa to Nyla Rose to everyone else in that tournament, Mercedes Martinez has suddenly disappeared again? Oh, we got a video package 2 weeks ago. Did anybody even think about Mercedes Martinez yesterday? No. Oh, she worked dark twice. You'll see. We were ahead of the curve about Jay Lethal. We were ahead of the curve about Leah Rush, but now we know Leah Rush is leaving. And I'm telling you now, Mercedes Martinez will be the next one on that list that you will suddenly have people say, oh, Mercedes Martinez, she's missing on Dynamite. She's missing on Friday, Rampage. What happened? You watch. I'll make the little comment tonight. Mercedes, 53. I'm doing timestamps. Mercedes Martinez will be the next one that people will put on milk cartons. What happened to her run? Mercedes Martinez is awesome. It's awesome. She's good. Do I think Chris Jericho faces Eddie Kingston in a street fight at Revolution? Well, Eddie Kingston right now is a broken orbital bone, I believe, a fractured orbital bone. That's usually 4 to 6 weeks recovery. So he could be recovered in time for Revolution. Revolution, I believe, is the first week in March. That's possible. The problem is, I don't know what they're doing with the Inner Circle. You would think that they would just get a new member, make new members, not disband it completely, because the merchandise sold pretty well. You know, there's no reason why you have to disband it. Eddie Kingston versus Jericho could happen. But what's the storyline other than, you know, they're fighting over Santana and Ortiz? You might as well put Santana and Ortiz on a pole, you know, with Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston. I could see it happening. I could see we got to get it out of our system, Chris. You versus me at Revolution. You know, got to get it out of our system. We got to do something about it. And they have the match for the sake of having a match. But the problem is, then what? Even if Jericho does the job for Eddie Kingston, and then what? What, Santana and Ortiz because Jericho lost? You're a loser. We don't want to be around a loser. You know, don't. I hope to God they don't do something like, you know, Eddie Kingston versus Chris Jericho, the winner of the match is the leader of the Inner Circle. I mean, I'm not saying it'll be exactly that, but I could see something like that possibly happen. I don't want to see that. I don't really care if Jericho turns heel. This stage of the game, he's at the twilight of his career. Why would you want to turn Jericho heel now? I mean, you enjoy whatever time is left with Jericho. You could tease it a little bit, but fans want to sing Judas. Fans want to appreciate whatever time Jericho has left still inside the ring. I wouldn't turn him heel, but hey, you know, maybe he wants to. Don't know. So, let's see. Let's see what else we could talk. Oh, Dynamite's rating came in. 1,100,000 viewers. So, the streak of pro wrestling shows with an increase in ratings is now up to 7, I believe. The last show to have a decrease in the ratings, I believe, was the January 18th edition of NXT. I will tell you, I have this gut feeling Impact Wrestling's rating is not going to go up tonight. I gave a lot of props to Impact Wrestling the last month. A lot of places just ignored it. Impact Wrestling, since the third week in December, has had 5 straight weeks of wrestling rating increases. And their rating has gone up 60% in those 5 weeks. This was before Christmas. This was not Christmas Eve. This was not Christmas Day. So Impact, legit, you get 5 straight weeks of growth, 60% increase. You're doing something right. I just think, just from looking at what was scheduled tonight, I think that streak ends, to be honest with you. But good for them, man. Good for them. And good for Dynamite. 1,100,000. They are keeping their audience. And yes, you know, you get the opening ladder match and it did like 1,200,000 viewers. They kept the fans hooked. The Jericho Santana Ortiz versus 2.0 and Daniel Garcia, we figured yesterday that it really brought a lot of people back down. That extreme high from the ladder match, you bring them down. It's not just those live in attendance, it's people at home. Change the channel for a little while. They had like 200,000 people change the TV. That's a lot of people. But still, that opening 2 quarters was enough to really, you know, boost it. Roger, I appreciate the super chat, but you didn't have to do that, my friend. I know why you did. But again, when it comes to, I should have disabled it tonight. When it comes to channel members, you know, tonight, you know, you all have my undivided attention. So I try to spread the love. But today is his 25-year anniversary. Oh, I take it back. He's wearing my 25-year anniversary shirt. I should have put it into the room. I'm not going to get up now and get it, but I got the jersey. I'm glad you like the shirt, my friend. I mean, the person who did the artwork for me really did me a good favor. You know, I talked to a few people online, and this person ended up being a fan of the show, and he's like, let me do something for you. You know, a little way of giving back. And I'm like, you know, let me give you something in return. And he banged that out in like 4 days. And I was like, man, I could get. And, you know, it was a little disappointing. Like, other than Lee and maybe Mish, I mean, every show out there, you know, just no soul did, ignored it. You know, I'm not saying that anybody needed to plug it or buy it, but, you know, I think that's pretty awesome to be able to do this stuff for 25 years. And, you know, you see the jealousy out there, but I'm glad you like it. But the jersey, my God, I haven't put it on yet. To me, it looks like a nightshirt. It looks huge in size, but my God, the graphic is so big. I swear to God, you see Danhausen's head over here? His head is this big. On this jersey, my head is this big. It's crazy. The jersey came out nice. The 25 in the back, the numbers are like this big. So I'll show you all maybe Saturday. Maybe Saturday. If Ronda Rousey comes back, I might wear a Ronda Rousey shirt instead. If one of the outcomes that I predicted happens, I want to wear that person's shirt. So we'll see. If I don't wear it Saturday, I'll wear it Sunday on the sit down. So, got a question for all of you. Guys, gals that are looking at the video right now, for those on audio only, I am showing a picture of a Cody Rhodes autographed photo. I believe it's 11 by 16 to be, you know, be fair, a 12 by 16. It's not just an 8 by 10. It's a little bit bigger. It could even be a 16 by 20. I ask everybody out there, and even if you're checking out the audio only version of this, I will post this picture in the community section on YouTube for everybody to see after the show is over. My question to you is, would you pay $499 for that? It's not framed. It's not a lithograph. It's not an original print. It is a photo, an autographed photo of Cody Rhodes. $499. Would you pay $500 for an autograph photo? I guess we could segue into this now. I told you all yesterday that I was going to pull up. Where is this? Where the hell is this store? Oh, yeah, here it is. I'm just putting the timestamp down. I've been talking about this for weeks, and a lot of people still have not checked it out. Maybe they don't know where exactly to go, and that's totally understandable. But, you know, we know Upper Deck was coming out with the AEW trading cards. I still have probably about 50 CM Punk cards. I was thinking about getting them graded. I could still give some away. You know, we pulled back on the contest a little bit. You know, we basically, you know, I think that was just getting a little bit overwhelming. I mean, I have a stack of photos like this that WWE sent me to give away. Bunch of Vince McMahon photos as well. I think those I'm going to send out to JSA to get authenticated. I still would give a few away, but if you get them JSA authenticated, those photos will be worth $400-$500 a piece. Vince McMahon autographs are not easy to get, but AEW started selling memorabilia. Now, you might remember about 3 or 4 months ago, I said that AEW should be selling more memorabilia, collectibles, but I never in a million years ever thought that they would sell just autographed photos and ask this kind of money. So I have that I'm going to put on the screen right now. I have the actual Upper Deck website, and I'm putting the chat room as a pop-out so I could see everybody's reaction. And I'm about to show everybody. And don't worry if you're on audio only. I will read some of these prices. But for those channel members that get this video, you can now look at the screen. Don't worry if you're on your little phone and you can't see the print, because I'm going to click on some of these individually. This is the AEW Upper Deck Collectible Store. And the only memorabilia items that they have here are signed photos. They are either 8x10 or 16x20, which is double the size. But still, it's double the size. You know, really, if you think of it, it's not like a Big Mac or Coke. You know, instead of getting a 20-ounce, I get a 40-ounce. And, you know, this is just a little bit bigger paper. The autograph is still pretty much the same size. It's printed on bigger paper. So let's charge almost twice as much money. So for those that could see this right now, we have right here an autographed photo of CM Punk for $499. Would you pay $500 for an autograph? It is limited to 99, but still, so what? $499 for a CM Punk. Oh, you want the smaller one? No problem. $299. Limited to 75. Oh, wow. Gee. That is freaking insane, if you ask me. So let's go through some of these other prices. Now, what I'll do first is I will just get into the 8x10s just to give you an idea of what they're asking for. So the 8x10s, they have CM Punk for $299, Sting for $299, Kenny Omega, $299, Hikaru Shida, $199, Chris Jericho, $299, Cody Rhodes, $299, Ruby Soho, $199, Adam Cole, $199, Jade Cargill, $199. Hold on, I'm just going to 8x10s right now. Hold on. Jim Ross, $299. Rey Fénix, $199. Hold on, it gets better, everybody. Darby Allin, $199. Orange Cassidy, $199. Now we go to 16x20s. MJF, $299. Orange Cassidy, $299. Interesting how they didn't sign 8x10s. They only signed the big ones. Brian Cage, $299. Jungle Boy, $299. Ty Conti, $299. With all due respect, I have nothing against Ty Conti. You tell me that you would spend $300 for an autographed photo of Ty Conti. Matt Jackson, $299. Nick Jackson, $299. John Moxley, $499. Jim Ross, $499. Matt Hardy, $299. Miro, $299. Pac, $299. CM Punk, $499. Sting, $499. Jericho, $499. Hikaru Shida, $299. Kenny Omega, $499. Cody, $499. Ruby Soho, $299. Britt Baker, $499. $500 for a Britt Baker autograph. We gave away one on New Year's Eve. Trust me, the person that gave it to me, you know, we did a little trade for a few things. I guarantee you, even if it was 8x10, it's not worth $299. If I put that shit on eBay, or the person that won it put it on eBay, they probably would get $50 for it. This is what AEW is asking for their memorabilia. I mean, it's on Upper Deck. I personally don't understand why they needed Upper Deck to do this. I don't know why this isn't just on their Pro Wrestling Tee site, but that is fucking insane. But you know what's funny? Remember I told you about the Don West deals, that he would be on TV, would shop at home, and he'd be like, you got to order now. There's only three left. And then you call the automated line and it would say, please enter the amount you'd like to purchase. And you would type in 15. That'll be $2,736. Please type in your credit card number. And you realize this motherfucker is saying on TV, there's only three left. But meanwhile, there was 15. So now, let's see. This Sting autograph is limited to 99. So, well, we got to find one that's 70. Let's see what happens if we put 99 in the cart. Let's see. Can I buy 99 of them? Let's see. The requested quantity is not available. Okay, let's type in 98. The request, okay, let's type in 60. Maybe it won't let me just buy this many. Yeah, so I don't think it lets me buy this many. Let's go to Ty Conti. Because with all due respect, nothing against Ty Conti. There ain't nobody that's spending $300 for a Ty Conti autograph. So this Ty Conti autograph, it is limited to 99. So let's go back and let's see. Okay, can I buy 20 of the Ty Contis? Oh, I can. Look at that, 20. All right, let's keep going. Let's buy another 20. So we're up to 40. Look at that. I think I got 40. Look, I got 40 in the cart. Look, $11,999. Let's see. What is it, limited to 99? All right, so we have 40 in the cart. Let's put 59. Let's see if we can buy all 99. The request, okay, maybe Sammy bought one. Sorry, let's go to 58. This will be 58. That is not available. Okay, let's go to, oh, you know what? Maybe you can't buy that much. Maybe you have to do it in increments of 20. So we're up to 40. Let's buy another 20. Let's buy another 20. You know what would be funny? Oh, that quantity's not. There ain't no way. There is no way that they already sold 40 of these Ty Conti autographs. I'm serious. There must be some type of a limit. Let's put 10. Look, I got 50. Let's put another 10. 10, 10, 10. Let's see what happens. Okay, so there is 50. Let's see if there's 59. So there's somewhere between 50 and 60 still available. But, you know, that, look, $14,000. I would not pay that kind of money. You know what's the worst part about some of these? Hey, look, WWE's guilty for this as well. You go back. I wonder if Adam Cole's autograph looks the same. In AEW. Let me see, because I got an NXT one right here. I'll put the video back on the screen. Okay, that is Adam Cole. Oh, boy. Wow. Wow, they were freaking lazy in NXT. That is an Adam Cole autograph. It's just basically a scribbled A for the most part. And, you know, the Cole is all right, but still, $299. I ain't paying for that. All right. So you saw that one here. Yeah. Look at this one up close. You can't even make out the A. You can't even make out the A. You see his autograph? So just think about it. They're charging $299 for an Adam Cole autograph. What I have in front of me has Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, Karrion Kross, Adam Cole. These are all autographed, all in the same thing. You have Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, Karrion Kross, Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, Ted DiBiase, Cameron Grimes, LA Knight, Raquel Gonzalez, Ember Moon, Xia Li, Boa, Mei Yang, Mercedes Martinez, and MSK, Bronson Reed, and Legado del Fantasma. Every single person autographed this. This would be $6,000. That's insane, man. That is freaking insane. I would never, seriously, I don't care if somebody like did like a former like Playboy shoot and it was like a screenshot from like Hustler magazine where they're just like spread naked and then autographing it. I just would not spend $300 on an autograph. The only way I would is if it was personalized. And I know what a lot of people are going to say. Well, as soon as you personalize it, the value goes down. But me, I like things made out to me. You know, some of my autographs that I've shown you from Daphne to Terry Funk and others, the ones that were written to me, I cherish those. You know, it's not just signing it, but that's crazy. What did Tuxedo Art say? If anyone does purchase any of these, that's ridiculous prices. Look, some people have the money. I will never criticize anybody for spending money that way. Look, you look at the phone calls with the Cricket Wireless, and they have like a WWE star that does a 2-minute phone call with a fan, and they charge $200-$500 to talk with their favorite star for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And you all, look, there's a girl that she's very young and she podcasts a little bit. And you go to her channel, I'm not going to say who it is, and I'm not criticizing her. God bless her. You go to her channel and you see that she has talked to probably about 15 WWE stars with like this Cricket stuff or the wrestler, and you realize that she's banging out between $200 and $500. You know, you remember the one with Alexa Bliss that they wanted like $500? Charlotte was $400 or $500. And then you see 10 to 15 of these. I mean, you're talking $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. If that makes you happy and something that will always mean something to you, I will not criticize anybody how they spend their money. Just for me, I couldn't. That's just crazy. Especially because, look, you know why I say this? I'm not criticizing anybody trying to make money with autographs, but I want to make this point. You look at what I just showed everybody, those photos. Now, you go back. I'll just show this one more time. You go back. All right. Now, some of these posed photos are okay. You know, the larger ones. But when you go to like the 8x10s, you look at something like this. This is just like a PNG with, it looks like an Adobe Spark photos. They just took Sting, a PNG of Sting. They put some red background and he signed it. That's all it is. And they're charging $300 for it. My point is this. You go on eBay right now and you buy another Sting photo that looks just as nice. That's all. I have Sting autograph photos inside. I've had them stored for years. And honestly, some of them to me look better than that. If I put on eBay, I'd probably get $30, $50. My point is this. Why would you pay $299 when the photo has no personal attachment to you? What I mean by that is it's not like it was a virtual autograph signing and you buy it and Sting is on video. Hey, Johnny, thank you very much for being a fan and thank you very much and keep supporting AEW, and he signs it for you live. Okay, that's different. These, you got some person working for Upper Deck in a mailroom. Oh, I need to pull a Sting photo. Oh, number 33. And then put it in an envelope and they mail it out to you. It's not like it was done live, that it's done specially for you. They're just pulling a random number and shipping it to you. So what's the difference between that and going on eBay and buying something else for 1/10 of the price? So if this was a little bit different circumstances, if they did a virtual signing, honestly, if, and this is an idea what AEW should consider. Hey, next Thursday from 2 to 4 p.m., limited edition, 75 photos. Sting will do a virtual autograph signing, $299 a photo. Sting will sign it live on the air for you. I could see that like that, snatched up. And the way technology is, somebody could be there with an iPhone connected to YouTube. We're streaming live. It's not like, oh, we have to have this major simulcast. No. You put Sting in front of a table, and he's autographing, thank you, you know, and he just signs them. While you'd sell out 75 like that. All right, let's move on. How long are we going? Wow, we're almost 90 minutes already, everyone. And I've not even had 2 ounces of my water. I wonder if anybody really bought the Ty Conti photos. My gut feeling is they release 50. And maybe after those sold, they release more. I don't believe that 50, almost 50 of those photos already sold. There's just no way. I'm not saying that people wouldn't buy it. I just don't believe it, to be honest with you. When they release another new autograph, I got to get the alerts emailed to me. This way, the minute it goes on sale, I go right to that website and I put the maximum in the cart and see if it allows me to buy it. I wouldn't buy it, but no, it'd be funny. Imagine, because a lot of shopping carts, you know, some stores, you put it in your cart and they'll say, your cart will be held for 60 minutes. They do that with Amazon Fresh. We will hold your cart, or you'll hold your time for 60 minutes. Imagine they put something on sale and you go right on the website. There's 99 available. You put 99 in your cart. And there's an alert that comes on. We will save your cart for 60 minutes. Every other fan that was trying to buy that freaking photo, God, it sold out already. What the hell happened? And you'd have some goof news website that would say, Sting autographs sell out in 3 seconds. That would be funny. And then after 60 minutes, you release the cart, then you add them back to your cart. I mean, somebody could be trying. Trust me, there's nobody sitting back in upper deck in their office, their warehouse. They're like, hey, man, somebody keeps putting 99 Sting photos in their cart, and they're letting it sit there for an hour, and nobody's able to buy it. Seriously, if you really wanted to troll, you know what it would be like? It'd be like the military. When I went to boot camp back a long time ago, when I went into boot camp for the Navy, what they would do is they would do night, what was it, night guard? I don't remember, it was night something. And basically everybody was sleeping. And right at the front where everybody was sleeping, you would sit at a desk. And you'd have to sit there for about 2 hours or 3 hours, and then somebody else would sit, and it would rotate. And there was no real war or anything. They were just training you that in a real life situation, somebody would have to be on guard. They were simulating it. But the funny thing is that throughout the night, every 2 hours, somebody else would just, so, you know, we get like near, we get some of our international friends and be like, hey man, I got all 99 Sting photos in my cart. My cart's going to expire in about 35 seconds. Be ready. Cause as soon as it expires, cause I got to go to bed. I can't keep doing this anymore. And then you get somebody international where it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and that person puts 99 in their cart. And they just keep doing it throughout the day. They got a lot of free time. And then when it's done, Rams fan, who's, you know, here in the United States, the time difference is different. He puts it in the cart and you just do it ongoing. Don't think it would ever sell. Night Watch. Thank you, James. Night Watch. That's what it was. Night Watch. I did it. I did Night Watch. All I remember from boot camp and Night Watch, it was very cold. I was in Chicago. You know, a lot of people know this story, you know, that I went into boot camp. I was forced. I got thrown out of my house. I had no place to go. My uncle took me in, God rest his soul, for a couple of days. And he's like, you know, we can't keep you here. So I had to do something. Wasn't going to live homeless. So I joined the Navy. And what was scary about it is when I signed up, it's not like, oh, I get to go home for a week or two and then, you know, go to, it was like literally 2 days later. They're like, okay, you know, the bus is going to take you to the airport in 2 days. And I'm like, within a week, I'm fucking in Illinois. Like, that'll happen here. Oh yeah, it definitely made me a better man. I mean, that was not fun. I saw two people commit suicide. and one took a razor blade and slit his wrists, and one filled up his mouth with shaving cream. I know that sounds like a bad comedy, but that was legit. He was suicidal. They took his razor blades away. They didn't take away his shaving cream. He actually filled up his mouth and his throat with shaving cream, and he choked on it to death. That was not fun. I miss the people I met there. It breaks my heart, and I know I have it somewhere. I had a book, and I wrote, like, people's names, phone numbers in it. And after I got out, and it was 1988 when I went in. When I got out, you know, we didn't have cell phones really at that time. It was just beepers. But I kept in contact with a few from, I think, Louisiana. And believe it or not, I actually made friends with mostly black people there. Like, a lot of the white guys there were just like hicks from the South. Some very, very nasty, very, you know, racist in a lot of ways. My nickname was Polar Bear because I was, I think, 285 pounds when I went into the Navy. I have a picture of me when I first got into the Navy with my head shaved, wearing a sailor cap and everything. I got to find it from my mom. I got to show it to you. You will laugh your ass off. But my nickname was Polar Bear because I was white and big. And they're like, wow, you're like a white polar bear. And this guy, oh, God, his name was, oh, God. I don't remember his name. I think it was Larry. But his nickname was Cornbread. Yo, Cornbread, what's up? He loved cornbread. I got my cornbread. But it was, you know, there was some good people I met there. I was very, very depressed. I felt like I let my whole family down, let my grandmother down. That was the hardest thing. To this day, I still remember. Yeah, I could have been Flounder, but no, they called me Polar Bear. But I brought it up before. I walked to the phone. We were allowed to call family like once every 5 days. And I called. I was on a Saturday, and my grandmother, the one that got me into wrestling, she was over at my mom's house. And my mom's like, you want to talk to Nanny? Because that's why I called her. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I am so disappointed in you. And it broke my heart because I was closer to my grandmother than anybody else in my family at the time. So when I got out, you know, I vowed that I was not going to do the things I did before because I did some pretty messed up stuff. You know, we'll talk about that another time. But, and I'm only having this conversation because everybody live, you know, they're continuing the convo. So I'll continue the convo. All right. We got to speed this up a little bit because, you know, it's getting a little late. But I saw early in the show and a few minutes ago, some of you were bringing up the Hall of Fame for baseball. And I am just going to make a couple of quick comments about this. I'm going to give you my thoughts about the 2022 Hall of Fame class, which features one person, some people that did not get in, and what I have here that you might find a little bit of a treat is who would be first-time eligible in 2023, 2024, 2025, 2026, in 2027. It's pretty wild when you look at it, but also at the same time, it's a little bit depressing, and I'll tell you why. The Hall of Fame class for 2022 features just one person, David Ortiz. Don West's voice was Tito Ortiz. I can picture Don West. David Ortiz. David Ortiz got 77.9% of the vote, just barely over the 75. It's 75, right, to get in, or 70? But he's in. And look, I always liked David Ortiz. I know there was the controversy. You know, there was steroids scandal, like, you know, surrounding him at some point in his career. But I am very, very, very angry. I have been very angry for 10 years. And believe me when I tell you, in my opinion, these writers are hurting baseball more than you could imagine. What blew me away about this voting is, I think it was the Major League Baseball Players Association, that might have been them, but one of the groups, Major League Baseball, put up a vote. They wanted everybody's ballot made public. And the writers said no. And I'm not going to get into the whole procedure, how you can become a writer, because it's a lengthy discussion. But if you ever look into how you could become a writer, as far as someone who could cast a Hall of Fame ballot, I think that's better to say, you realize that there's a lot of people who are casting ballots that have no business being considered a journalist. And you got people who have these vendettas against certain players, certain attitudes. You look at Curt Schilling, for example. Curt Schilling has ruffled a lot of people's feathers with his political views. And I understand being a representative of the Hall of Fame is also based on character. But simply because he rubbed so many people the wrong way with his political views, they kept him out of the Hall of Fame. He's done. Roger Clemens, it has never been proven that he took steroids. Sure. Do I think deep down inside he took steroids? Yes, he did. But there are hundreds of other players who took steroids that were never caught. I guarantee you there's some people in the Hall of Fame right now who took steroids, never got caught, who took other performance-enhancing drugs back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and never got caught. And the fact that you have people like Barry Bonds! Got to do my Don West. But Barry Bonds, who was a Hall of Famer even before he bloated up, and you look at his stats, and you look at Clemens, who again, never proven to have taken steroids, and you have a group of writers that basically control the Hall of Fame destiny of these players. In my opinion, former players, Hall of Famers, they're the ones that should be casting ballots. People in the organizations should be casting the ballots. Having some of these writers, these journalists that have some of them, if you look into it, it'll blow your fucking mind how pathetic. And I'm not saying it because of their views. You look at it like, this person hasn't written anything in 20 years. How is this person worthy to cast a ballot? They don't want their ballots shown publicly. And as a result, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, even Sammy Sosa, if you want to put an argument up for Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa only got 18% of the vote. It's pathetic. And this is why the game is being hurt in a lot of ways. Because I grew up on Reggie Jackson. I grew up on the 78 Yankees, the 86 Mets. You know, I grew up on the 85 Royals, the Cardinals, the Giants, the Dodgers, 88. You know, you look at those teams, and these were larger-than-life stars. And we all wanted to be them, and you do have flaws. I mean, Pete Rose, yeah, he bet on baseball, and Pete Rose definitely deserved to be banned. But I think after all of these decades and him cleaning up his act, him being a good ambassador for the game, that should not be a death sentence. Pete Rose is one of the greatest hitters ever in our game, and they can't put him in the Hall of Fame. And when you see these writers that won't even make public who they voted for and who they didn't vote for, and then you start looking, if you spend the time and you look and you see the bios of some of these. Now, look, there's some writers that are well-known. We've seen them on MLB Network and other places. I'm not saying everybody's like that. But when you see hundreds of writers and you look at their background and you're like, are you kidding me? And they are the ones to tell us that the people that we grew up with, that we have memories for, the ones we idolized, and sure, maybe nobody is perfect, but I live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty. And you have a bunch of writers who are convicting people, you're guilty until proven innocent. And as a result, some of my favorite players will never go into the Hall of Fame unless some veterans committee does it. And that is fucking pathetic. And until they change the process, how people are voted in, it's getting worse and worse and worse. So you look at the 2023 eligible players that will be first time eligible, okay? Carlos Beltran, I don't think he has any shot whatsoever. Matt Cain, I'm just mentioning players that have some notoriety. Some people may think may have a little shot here or there, but Matt Cain, no. Andre Ethier, John Lackey, Mike Napoli, Johnny Peralta, nope. Francisco Rodriguez, he had that 1 year, what do you have, like 62 saves? You know, look, he was a Mets closer for a little while. Houston Street, Jared Weaver, Jason Worth, nobody that will be eligible in 2023 is going in. You go to 2024, Jose Bautista, I doubt it. Adrian Beltre, I believe yes. Adrian Beltre will go in. Bartolo Colon, that is, I don't, maybe ultimately, but it'll take a lot of years. And he reminds me of what happened to Jim Cott. I don't see him going in. Adrian Gonzalez, nope. Matt Holliday, borderline, I doubt it. Jim Johnson, no. Victor Martinez, doubt it. Joe Mauer, I think he will ultimately. Brandon Phillips, no. Jose Reyes, no. James Shields, Chase Utley. David Wright, unfortunately, David Wright will be almost like Don Mattingly. Not enough years. Brad Ziegler, almost nobody. You go to 2025, Melky Cabrera, David Freese, Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gonzalez. Carlos Gonzalez will be affected because of the Rockies. And, you know, we know about the stats in Colorado. Curtis Grandison, no. Adam Jones, no. Ian Kinsler, Francisco Liriano, Brian McCann, Kendrys Morales, no. Dustin Pedroia, I doubt it. Martin Prado, Hanley Ramirez, Mark Reynolds, Fernando Rodney, CC Sabathia, possibly. I doubt it. Ichiro, yes. Tulo, Troy Tulowitzki, no. Ben Zobrist. So you got maybe one person in there, maybe two. 2026, Ryan Braun, nope. Sinchu Suchu, nope. You know what's sad as I read this? These are players that we enjoyed over the last 10 years. They're done. They're done. So many players that we loved watching are done. And that's what gets so freaking sad, you know? Edwin Encarnacion. Well, how does he? He does it like this, right? Gio Gonzalez, no. Alex Gordon, Matt Kemp, Howie Kendrick, Nick Markakis, Daniel Murphy. Wait a minute. Daniel Murphy retired? Oh, no. You know what I think this is now? I think that they're basing it on people who may retire. Wait. Daniel Murphy retires. Anyone know? That doesn't make sense. I'm not going to go any further. I'm not going to go any further with that. Now, the reason why I mentioned those years, let's go back to this year. the Hall of Fame class this year. Anybody that got over 7% of the vote that is still in it, Bobby Abreu, he ain't going in. Jimmy Rollins, Andy Pettit, they ain't going in. Sorry, my opinion. Omar Vizquel, doubt it. Manny, I doubt it. Jeff Kent should. Jeff Kent, I think, should. For second baseman, his offense, no ties to steroids. But I don't think he's going in. Gary Sheffield, I loved Gary Sheffield. I freaking loved Gary Sheffield when he played. 500 homers. But, you know, always the steroids circulating over his head. I don't think he goes in. Andrew Jones, no. Billy Wagner, another one that I loved, that I think deserves to go in. Not sure. Todd Helton, maybe. Maybe. Scott Rowland. That's it. You look at baseball for the next 4 years, who are eligible for the Hall of Fame, you might have one. You could have some years where there's only going to be one person going in. And you might have maybe a year where two people go in. But in my opinion, the days of having four, five put in are gone. And I don't know how you fix this with these writers. It is disgusting. Whether you agree with his political views or not, it is disgusting that Curt Schilling is not in the Hall of Fame. It is beyond imaginable that Roger Clemens is not in the Hall of Fame. I grew up watching every year that he played, and you could accuse him of steroids. You could think that he did it. There's no proof. And again, I live in a country, you're innocent until proven guilty. And this guy's not in the Hall of Fame. There are so many people that don't want to believe, don't want to idolize a lot of athletes in Major League Baseball anymore, because when it comes down to it, you got a whole bunch of unknown people out there that control if they are Cooperstown bound. And trust me, that is depressing. Look, I grew up, I always thought Keith Hernandez should be in the Hall of Fame. His defense and his leadership and his offense, maybe his offense didn't have crazy-ass numbers, but his defense was insane. And they didn't put him in. And that was very disappointing back then. But you have the great, arguably the greatest pitcher of our lifetime and the greatest hitter of our lifetime, and neither one are going to be put in because people don't like them and they feel that they did it. That's just not acceptable. I am nowhere near the baseball fan that I was 5 years ago. 10 years ago, certainly not. I used to play 6, 7, 10 fantasy baseball leagues a year. I don't play them anymore. I just, all this politics and see this crap, it just, I'm not happy. So that was my comments on the baseball. So, all right, last topic for tonight. Not going to spend much time on this. There's no need to. But I want to show this to you. I think you'll get a kick out of it. For my channel members that have video, you could look at your screen. This is an article that SBJ had with Nick Kahn, the Sports Business Journal. Legit. I mean, this is about sports and business. They did an interview with Nick Kahn. And I want to read a couple of comments from here. The author is John Arend, I believe it is. If you look at his resume, he's been a writer since like 2004. He's got almost 20 years in the field. This is not no bullshit person. You know, trust me, if I wanted to, I could write for Forbes, Sports Skeeter, any of these places. You know, if anybody that wants to write something, you write a couple of articles and then you go to Twitter and say, hey, verify me. I write for these big websites. And that's how you get in. This guy interviewed Nick Khan. And for those that don't have the video, a couple of points, because this is very interesting for a couple of reasons. Talks about all the changes with WWE recently. And as I read this, just take note of what is not brought up. Vince McMahon still controls the media and entertainment company out of Stamford, Connecticut. McMahon's daughter, Stephanie, Stephanie's husband, Paul Levesque, still have senior roles at the company as chief brand officer and executive vice president of global talent strategy and development. Quote, if it once was a mom and pop shop, Vince certainly didn't believe it was anymore, Nick Khan said. Quote, part of what I believe he was looking for in bringing in someone from the outside, Nick Khan, was to make sure the community at large didn't treat it that way, that they didn't treat WWE as a mom and pop operation. We believe we are a global content company. It just wasn't the broader sports and entertainment community that Khan targeted with this push. Khan felt that he needed to change internal attitudes as well. Just before making the move from CAA Sports to WWE, Nick Khan represented WWE as it sold its media rights to Fox and NBC. The Fox deal is worth $1 billion over 5 years. The NBC deal is worth around $1.3 billion over 5 years. During those 2008 negotiations, Nick Khan was struck by the attitude of some WWE staffers, most of whom were not steeped in the intricacies of media. Some of them, he said, acted as though they were fortunate just to have a seat at the table. They were content to negotiate with executives far down the chain of command. Now, as I'm reading this, and you really think about what is being said here, Nick Khan came in and changed the climate, changed the atmosphere of WWE, removed the people who were complacent. They were just happy to be there. They were just happy to have a seat at the table. They were just there to collect a paycheck. As I read this, you think about all of those wrestling shows and journalists out there that are pushing an agenda, and it is the absolute opposite of what is being discussed here. I continue the article. Khan believed that business attitude, not to mention an overall knowledge of the media marketplace, was needed to change at WWE. Quote, Vince believed that WWE was at a place where it had earned a seat at the adult table, but others in the company did not see it that way. Since Nick Khan joined WWE, he and Vince McMahon have overseen an almost complete turnover of WWE's media division. The types of media deals WWE cuts have changed. So too have the executives who negotiate them. The WWE has undergone so many changes since Nick Khan joined in August 2020 that rumors have run rampant that WWE is prepping itself for a sale. Nick Khan said the company has taken some calls from companies looking to buy. But Nick Khan stressed that WWE is not in any active conversations trying to sell the company and is not actively looking to sell. Nick Khan came to WWE after spending 13 years as one of the most powerful talent agents in the business. Soon after relocating across the country to Connecticut, Nick Khan went on a hiring spree. His goal was to bring in executives who shared Vince McMahon's vision about the size and the influence of the company. Quote, for the company to be treated the way that Vince, Stephanie, Kevin Dunn, and myself and others believed it should be treated in the community, you needed executives who reflected that, who had range, who could get people on the phone, who can be taken seriously by their peers. The McMahons and Khan hired four executives from Dazen, Jamie Horowitz, and I'm not going to read the names. They also picked up executives from ESPN, HBO, and Showtime. The result has been a series of moves that show a changing media strategy at the company. It embarked on a new streaming strategy that licensed the over-the-top service, WWE Network, to Peacock as part of a five-year, $1 billion deal, opting to partner with a big media company that could promote its programming rather than try to compete in an increasingly crowded market. Nick Khan said, in what is now a cluttered OTT subscriber marketplace, it only made sense to partner with somebody. WWE executives see that deal as a template for similar international streaming deals. WWE decided to partner with other production houses not affiliated with the company on programming using its biggest stars. Quote, we want to be in the business with everybody who is a real player in the business. Understanding the business, where it's at, where it's heading, is all key to a part of this. WWE's management unrolled an ambitious live event schedule that will see the company stage the most number of events in stadiums this year, starting with the Royal Rumble from the Dome in St. Louis. One of its strategies is to stage events on different nights of the week, moving, for example, SummerSlam to a Saturday night from a Sunday night. WWE credited that move with helping the event post the largest gate in its history. Obviously, this is a huge opportunity to grow revenue in the live events business, Nick Khan said, mentioning that ticket sales for this month's Royal Rumble are tracking at an all-time high for the event. Now, I'm sorry if that was a little bit of an extended read. I don't normally do extended reads here, but I think it's something that if you really paid attention to it, you understand what WWE is doing right now. You understand that just having bloated salaries and having bodies there is just not the way to grow. And that's why we have changes, what we see on camera and behind the scenes. And yet, you look at the wrestling journalist side, and all they could talk about is creative, creative, creative. All they could talk about is Triple H's legacy is being erased. All they could talk about is, NXT Black and Gold is dead, and Vince and Bruce are taking over everything. You notice how these business interviews, the sports world, in the finance world, they don't bring up any of the stuff that these other places do, because these other places are thinking, they're talking with their emotions and not bothering. How many of you out there have seen any of these other journalists or shows cover this? They're all ignoring it, because the more you start understanding this side of it, you now understand why things are happening the way they are. WWE just inked a deal with Disney that they're going to have their streaming in Indonesia. That may not be like a big deal right now, but it's going to lead to other international deals as well. And WWE realizes, Nick Khan went in there and is changing the attitude, the landscape. And that comment, I think, is most important. There were too many people in the company that were just happy to be there. They were just happy to be there, content. That's not just in the offices. That's not just in the executive field. That also has to do with wrestlers. So, like I said, this may not be all sexy and it may not be all that exciting, But the more you understand how the WWE machine is working and operating, the more you realize this noise about WWE officials not happy with NXT 2.0, that they're doing this and they're ruining this and Triple H's legacy is being this and they're doing it. And then you see this, it just blows your mind, you know, at what is going on. You know, it's terrible. And like I said, this is a very important interview because it really not only outlines what WWE, you're talking billions of dollars here. You got people online that when they hear budget cuts, they still think that WWE says that as if they're having financial problems. How could you claim budget cuts when you're making record profits? Anybody that still says this doesn't have a clue of what business is about. But yet, somebody says that, and you'll get 1,000 likes behind it. You see the Free Ali stuff, and I brought it up before. Who am I, and who are you to tell Ali and to force Ali has to quit? WWE has to release him. Ali can't do this anymore. Ali should do this. And if he does this, he's a salary. Who are we to tell anybody how they should earn their living? How they should, yeah, you feel bad for the guy because he's frustrated and he feels he could contribute more. However it's resolved, you should respect Ali's intentions and that's it. But that's what happens. That's why when Road Dogg said what he said last week, and you noticed none of these shows confronted Road Dogg. They just sat back. And then they talked about Road Dogg on their shows. And they wrote about it on their blogs. But they had the opportunity to confront him face to face on social media. And they didn't. Why? Because if Road Dogg would have schooled them and Road Dogg would have won the argument, that's devastating for some of these people that have this narrative of what NXT has become and what it's become of Triple H. It wasn't because. So this is why I follow the business side of it. I don't try to be a wise ass when I say that I want to learn from millionaires and billionaires and try to understand why things are being done than listen to somebody who doesn't even have a paper route. You know, and you read articles like this. Take note of the journalist that doesn't even ask, but what about the rumors of this? Or what about Triple H? And they're not even shooting down the rumors of Triple H because it's so asinine and ridiculous. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought it was important to bring up so at least you could really not only understand a little bit more, but here's another interview where they are point-blank telling you what they're doing and why they're doing it, and everybody ignores it. People don't want the truth. They just want their agenda to happen. It's got to happen. It's got to happen. People have went on that mountain. Now they got to die on it. So, all right, everybody. We're at 2 hours. I'm going to jet out of here. I want to thank our awesome channel members for hanging out tonight. Pleasure, as always. And, you know, I love doing these shows for all of you out there. And, look, if you're a channel member and you didn't get a chance to tune in live, you know, stop by next week. You know, from 10 p.m. till about 11:30, 12 at the latest. And, you know, interact and we'll have some convo. And my next show is going to be after the Royal Rumble, you know, with your Royal Rumble recap. Now, don't forget for our channel members, tomorrow, right after SmackDown, be aware of it. Right after SmackDown, I'm going to put up the predictions contest in the community section. Channel members will obviously be the only ones to see it, but I'll have the contest up there. Very, very easy if you've never taken part before. And then for our Patreon family, I will put up a contest Friday night as well. You'll have both sides. We'll have until about 3 p.m. on Saturday to enter. You're basically just predicting who's going to win every match. And we'll probably do like two bonus questions, like who's the last eliminated in the Rumble on the men and the women's side. You cannot select other as far as a winner. I know Ronda Rousey has not been announced, and I know there's a lot of people that think that she's going to win. So when you do put your entry up, and the question is, who's going to win the Women's Royal Rumble? You cannot write other, because there's a lot of others that could appear. So you have to put the person's name. So I am sticking with my predictions that I made Monday. And I will say this, it's pretty amazing to see how many shows in the last 24 to 48 hours are now, after months, weeks of insisting that this person is going to win and this one. Now suddenly so many of these shows are echoing exactly word for word what I said Monday. And now with Brock Lesnar advertised for Saudi Arabia, which was not the case last week, now even more people think, all right, something is happening at the Royal Rumble that Brock Lesnar may have to win something in Saudi Arabia to get the WrestleMania title shot. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes down at the Royal Rumble. I'm excited. I think it's going to be fabulous. But we will see. We will see. So enjoy it. And I will see you all again for Q&A next Thursday night at 10:05 p.m. Be careful for those who are going to be in the midst of this snowstorm. We're supposed to get it tomorrow. Northeastern, crazy winds. I'm just praying to God that my brother steps up and shovels snow by my dad's house, because my dad cannot shovel snow. So, Bob the Builder, I have no idea what you're talking about. Do I think The Miz will surpass Roddy Piper? Thank you for the super chat, by the way, but surpass in what way? Surpass in what way? I don't know what you mean. If you're talking about legacy, no. Two totally different eras. MJF will never surpass Roddy Piper. Miz will not surpass Roddy Piper. They're just two totally different eras. Better heel? No. Two totally different eras. Listen, if Piper would have been able to say some of the outrageous things like MJF said about Brian Pillman Jr.'s mom and others, and believe me, back in the 80s, Piper got close, you know, but once he got to WWF, I think the worst thing that he said was making fun of Cyndi Lauper's mom, Latrine Dominique, whatever her name was. Totally different era. So, Miz, one of the better heels for our generation, but more of like a pompous college chicken shit guy, you know, that you just wanted to see smacked. Roddy Piper, people tried to stab him. You know, it's totally different eras. I would not compare 70s and 80s to 2010s and 2020s. Miz will be looked back on at one of the more entertaining heels. At the end of the, as each year goes by, he gets more and more respected. But, it's totally different era. You really can't compare it. I think deep down inside, I don't think MJF would, he loves to be compared to Piper because he idolized Piper, was a huge fan of Piper, but it's two totally different eras. And you can't, it's not surpass. You would surpass someone more in the record department, not necessarily in the profile. It's two totally different eras. You look at wrestlers from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you watch some of their footage, it would be some of the most boring shit that we ever saw today. But back then, that was accepted. It's totally different era. So, Tuxedo Earth wished he tuned in live last week. Yeah, about the Sailor Moon stuff. I actually had gotten a couple of DMs that night, and some people like, hey, that kind of looks like Sailor Moon stuff. And when I immediately did a Google search and looked back at its origin from about 30 years ago, I said, oh, yeah, okay. You see the locket, you see everything about the cat and everything else. Yeah, it made sense. But if you don't get the Patreon show, Saray is discussed on one of the questions that came in, and it is a little bit disturbing. I have to admit it. I don't want to say who sent in the question, but when you hear it, you know, it's probably going to be like, whoa, It's wild. It's wild. It has to do with Saray, but I will post the Patreon show for our Elite Channel members tomorrow. And again, there's only about six of you that are in the Elite family that are not on Patreon. So, you know, I had a few people on Patreon bitching about it. And I said, all right, you know what? So I won't post the Q&A on Patreon. Is that fair? Oh, no, no, I like the Q&A. Okay. So our Q&A, which is hosted by our channel members, I put that on Patreon. Well, then I take the Patreon and I put it on for our channel members, right? Fair. I try to be fair. Yeah, I don't know if you heard of Tuxedo, but go check out Tuesday's show and just listen to the question that was sent in about Saray. That caught me off guard. So, all right, I'm out of here. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Royal Rumble. If you're around Saturday night, join me. For everyone else that is checking this out on the replay, you know, I hope you enjoy it as well. Send in feedback, any questions. You know, I'm always reading everybody's stuff. Sometimes it takes me a few days to get back to everybody because there's so much feedback coming in. But I promise you, I see everything. I ultimately respond. And I know your fellow viewers and listeners are also looking. And it's awesome. It's awesome. I love that 99% of the conversation that we all have is respectful. You know, we don't have to be angels. We can be a little wisey, you know, once in a while, but nothing malicious. And none of this, you know, putting people down simply because you have a difference of opinion. So have a great night, everyone. Enjoy the Rumble. I will see you on Saturday right after the Rumble. So good night, everybody.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.